Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants will be in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion at the end of today's presentations. During the question-and-answer portion, if you would like to ask a question, you may use star one on your phone. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
All right, thanks. Good morning, and thank you, everyone, for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email at, and I will spell it, N-E-S. dis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the April 2022 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Jared Geyer, lead forecaster for the NOAA National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center, who will provide a review of the severe weather and tornadoes that struck parts of the U.S. in April. And our third presenter is Jana Infante, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the summer of 2022. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide two to look at the April global temperatures. So in this map, we have two maps. The map on the left is the temperature anomalies map that depicts the areas that had above or below average temperatures. So the areas shaded in red means that during the month of April, those areas experienced above average temperatures, and the areas shaded in blue means that they had below average temperatures during the month. And then the map on the right is the percentiles map, which takes each gridded anomaly and puts that into a historical perspective, meaning how that particular grid point, that anomaly for that grid point, how did it compare with its own history. So during the month of April, we saw that much warmer than average April temperatures were present across parts of each of the land areas that we have for each continent that we have data for, as well as parts of northern, western, and southwestern Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean and across much of the Indian Ocean. Record high April temperatures were observed across parts of Central South America, the Oceania region, southwestern Pacific Ocean, and a large area of the southern and southwestern Asia, northern, northeastern Africa. Meanwhile, near to cooler than average April temperatures were observed across much of Central and northern North America, southern South America, Central Europe, southern Africa, as well as the Central Eastern Tropical and Southeastern Pacific Ocean. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold April temperature. Averaged as a whole, the April global temperature was 0.85 degrees Celsius above average, which is a 1.53 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this value tied with 2010 as the fifth warmest April since global records began in 1880, which is a total of 143 years of record keeping. In terms of continental averages, Asia as a whole had its warmest April on record with a temperature departure of 2.62 degrees Celsius, which is 4.72 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this value was 0.05 degrees Celsius or 0.09 degrees Fahrenheit above the previous record that took place in 2016. So an event that took place during the month was a high pressure system that brought very warm temperatures to parts of southern Asia during the last few days in April and into early May. And the areas that were mostly impacted were India and Pakistan, where maximum temperatures were over 40 degrees Celsius, which is 104 degrees Fahrenheit. There were multiple new temperature records that were set during that time frame. Averaged as a whole, Pakistan had its warmest April on record, with a temperature departure of 4.05 degrees Celsius or 7.29 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this exceeded the previous record that took place in 2010 by close to 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. The Oceania region had its fifth warmest April on record, while Africa, South America had an April temperature that ranked among the 12th warmest on record. North America was the only continent that had a continental average that was slightly below average, and it was the coldest April for North America since 2018. Moving now to slide 3, looking at the global surface temperature for the year-to-date, January through April period, it was 0.87 degrees Celsius or 1.57 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this ranked as the fifth highest January through April period on record. Looking at the map, we saw that during the first 4 months of the year, much warmer than average temperatures were present across parts of South America, Asia, Australia, the Atlantic and Indian Oceans, as well as parts of Mexico, Europe, Central Africa, and the Northern, Western, and South Central Pacific Ocean. Record high temperatures were observed across parts of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, as well as parts of South America and Southern Asia. Meanwhile, near to cooler than average temperatures were present across parts of North America, Northern Atlantic Ocean, the northern and southern parts of Africa, as well as central and eastern tropical and southeastern Pacific Ocean. However, no land or ocean area had a record cold January through April temperature. Regionally, Asia and the Caribbean region had their fourth warmest January through April period, while South America, Oceania, and Europe had a year-to-date temperature that ranked among the 11th warmest on record. Despite North America having a continental average that was above average for the period, it was the coldest January through April period since 2014 for North America. Looking ahead with data through April 2022, the year as a whole for 2022 is very likely to rank among the 10 warmest years on record, and has about less than 30% chance of it ranking among the 5 warmest years on record. Moving now to slide number 4 to look at the U.S. The U.S. as a whole had an April temperature of 50.7 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 0.4 degrees Fahrenheit below average, and ranked in the middle third of the historical period of record. Looking at the map, we see that temperatures were below average across parts of the Northwest to the Great Lakes and into the the Mississippi Valley, while parts of the Southwest, the Deep South, and portions of the East Coast had above average April temperatures. In terms of statewide averages, Washington State had its third coldest April on record, while Montana had its fifth coldest, and the states of Oregon, North Dakota, and Minnesota had a temperature that was that ranked among the top cold Aprils. During the month from April 11 through the 17th, there was a trough over the Pacific Northwest that helped bring really cold Arctic air into the region, and that resulted in very cold, the coldest temperatures across much of the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies and Northern Plains during that time period. However, no state had a top 10 warm April. Texas and Mexico had their 11th warmest April, and Arizona had its 12th warmest on record. In terms of precipitation, above average precipitation was observed across parts of the Northwest, Northern Rockies and the Plains, Great Lakes and the Northeast, while below average precipitation was observed across the Southwest, as well as Central and Averaged as a whole, the April precipitation total for the contiguous U.S. was 2.58 inches, which is close to average. Another interesting statistic for the states, North Dakota had its second wettest April on record, and this was mainly due to multiple late-season snow events that helped contribute to a wet April. And then Oregon, Minnesota had their seventh wettest April, while New Mexico had its second driest April on record, and Kansas had its third driest. And Colorado and Arizona had their fifth driest April on record. And then during the month, several tornado outbreaks occurred, which helped contribute to an above-average tornado count for the month. Moving now to slide number five to look at the year-to-date, for the contiguous U.S., the January through April temperature was 39.9 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 0.8 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and it ranked in the warmest third of the historical record. Temperatures were above average across parts of the west and along the east coast, while below average temperatures were present across parts of the upper Mississippi Valley and Great Lakes. California had its sixth warmest January through April period, while no other state had a top 10 warm or cold January through April period. In terms of precipitation, as you can see from the map, much of the western half of the contiguous U.S. had below average precipitation for the year to date. And then while much of the eastern half had near to above average precipitation. Averaged as a whole, the contiguous U.S. had 8.25 inches of rain, which is 1.22 inches below average and ranked as the 13th driest January through April period. California had its driest January through April period with only 3.25 inches of rain, which is close to 10 inches below average. And this surpassed the previous record set in 2013. Nevada and Utah had their third driest such period, while Arizona, Nebraska, and Mexico had a top 10 dry January through April period. North Dakota had its sixth wettest January through April. Moving now to my last slide, slide number six, looking at drought across the contiguous U.S. As of today, about 90% of the West, 72% of the High Plains, and 53% of the South were in some type of drought, which is moderate to exceptional drought. And drought was also present across parts of the Southeast. Looking at just the West, 42% are experiencing extreme to exceptional drought, which is the last two categories for drought. And then as a whole, 53% of the contiguous U.S. was in some type of drought, and this is about 3 percentage points less than 4 weeks ago. So there have been some improvements across parts of the Great Plains, while conditions did deteriorate across parts of the southern Rocky Mountains, the southwest, and southeastern regions. So that is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Jared Geyer.
All right. Hello, everyone. We will be beginning my initial slide here is slide seven, if you want to refer to that. And, again, I'm here today to refer and review April severe weather and examine that. And if you look at slide seven, the left-hand side map, I'll refer you to that initially. That's basically a map of where we saw severe weather occurrences in the month of April. There's a couple of days that aren't yet compiled there at the beginning, but essentially it gives you an idea of where severe weather occurred in the continental United States during the month of April. And on that left side map of slide seven, kind of a key there is that large hail reports are in green, severe wind reports are in blue, and tornadoes are in red. And there were a total of 209, probably higher than that, but 209 preliminary reports of tornadoes across the U.S. in the month of April, and that's right around the 15-year average of 240, and arguably we're at least near average, may end up slightly above when things are all said and done. So on the left-hand side of the map, you can see that most of the severe weather was distributed across the great areas from the Great Plains, the upper Midwest, also across parts of the Mid-South, and even the Deep South, spanning, say, areas from Oklahoma and Texas, all the way over to Georgia, the Carolinas, and Florida. And that's, as far as general locations, that's where we typically expect to see weather in the month of April. Things tend to work northward through the springtime, and we typically we saw what was fairly typical, where things tend to be a little more confined to the Deep South and then work their way northward as the month and as the spring wears on. Now, on the right-hand side of slide 7, we isolate just the tornadoes. So the same thing on the, as on the left side, except isolate for tornadoes. And you can see those 200-plus reports and where those tornadoes did occur. And, again, especially a focus across parts of the Deep South, but also some other areas into the Ohio Valley, Mid-South, and also the upper Midwest as well. So more than 1,800 total severe weather reports in the month of April. Severe winds were a little bit above normal. Large hail, severe hail was a bit below normal, and tornadoes were near normal or perhaps a bit above when all is said and done. Also, I note there that it can take upwards of 2 to 3 months to really finalize things as far as severe weather and tornado reports. Especially tornadoes, they take the vast majority of those. Tornadoes are surveyed, and it does take time to compile some of the final numbers there. So moving on to slide 8 now, just to put April in a little broader context as far as severe weather goes, in particular on slide 8, we're looking at tornadoes on the left-hand side, and that's the context for how the year began. As normal, January and February are usually relatively inactive, but even compared to the typical, we were a bit below average in January and February across the continental United States as far as tornadoes go. March turned much more active. March was even more active than typical as far as tornadoes go, and April largely continued that theme as well. And looking in more detail on the right-hand side of slide 8, I'll note there that to kind of simplify this and boil it down, our curve there, our line, is the accumulation of tornado reports. And so those are tornadoes with that red line, tornadoes year-to-date in 2022. And this graph actually runs through essentially the last day or two. And that compares to the average annual tornado trend, which is the black line. So basically with the red line being below the black line, initially January and February, we were slightly below normal in terms of our start of the year. But as mentioned, March turned much more active. You can see that really kind of spike up there, that red line rise well above the average, and then April's at least normal or perhaps slightly above normal. So overall, by the time we get to the here and now, we're running largely right around or just slightly above what we would typically expect to see across the United States in aggregate as far as total tornado numbers. Now, as we go into slide 9, I'm going to highlight several events that were the most impactful during the month of April. And the activity boiled down to several multi-day segments of severe weather and tornadoes, and that's fairly common. And it broke down to an early event early in the month, middle of the month, and then later in the month. Kind of boiled down to three different segments or clusters of multi-day activity. So on slide 9, first up is April 5th and 6th in the southeast United States. Over that multi-day period, there were around 80 confirmed tornadoes that we've counted thus far. And that, unfortunately, was highlighted by a tornado that produced EF4 damage. When I say EF4, that's on the enhanced Fujita scale. That scale runs on the low end from EF0 to EF5 on the higher end. There's an EF4 tornado near Pembroke, Georgia. That's highlighted on the left side map of slide 9 there in eastern Georgia. There are many other tornadoes, however, in other parts of South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and even far north Florida on that day. In particular, that EF4 tornado that I mentioned in Georgia near Pembroke, which is in Bryan County, Georgia. It was a 14-mile track tornado and produced damage. With peak estimated winds of 185 miles per hour, and that's the highest that we've had year-to-date thus far. All right, moving on to slide 10. Slide 10 highlights the middle of the month and active stretch we had there in the April 11 through 13th time frame, and in particular across parts of the upper Midwest and Mid-South, we had more than 70 confirmed tornadoes. And the maps on the 12th is on the left-hand side. You can see the tornadoes, again, in the red dots as far as tornadoes go. But severe weather across the upper Midwest, especially centered on Iowa and surrounding states. And then other severe weather occurred farther south, initially across Texas and Louisiana, but then that severe weather spread farther east as we went into the 13th on the right-hand side of slide 10 there. And it spread into broader parts of the Mississippi Valley, Mid-South, Tennessee Valley, et cetera, over into areas such as Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, and Tennessee and nearby areas. If you'll look at slide 11, my final slide here highlights a prolific event at the end of the month. This is April 29th in Kansas and Nebraska. There were at least 14 tornadoes during this event. There's a little inset map on the lower left of slide 11 that shows a kind of a broad regional look. Most of that severe weather was, again, as mentioned, was across Nebraska and Kansas, nearby states as well, Missouri and Oklahoma to some extent. But in particular, there was an EF3 tornado that moved through Andover, Kansas. If you're not familiar, Andover, Kansas is a eastern suburb of Wichita, Kansas, there in south central Kansas. And this tornado moved through populated areas, residential areas. It was on the ground for around 20 minutes, ended up as a EF3 tornado, producing at its peak EF3 damage, again, on the enhanced Fujita scale. And it had a nearly a 13-mile path length as it was on the ground for that 20 minutes. Or so. There were at least three injuries associated with that tornado, and fortunately, there were no deaths associated with that, which is certainly a great thing, especially in the context of going through residential areas and the like. You can see some of the unfortunate damage associated with that tornado in particular as it moved on the right-hand side as it moved through the Andover, Kansas area. And in all, nearly 1,000 structures sustained damage just in Andover, Kansas, alone during that event on April 29th. So with that, I'll now turn it over to Jonna.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. This is Jonna Infante, meteorologist from the National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center. I'd like to now bring your attention to slide 12 of the presentation, which shows the current sea surface temperature observations and forecast for the El Nino Southern Oscillation. The figure on the left shows the current sea surface temperature anomalies in the tropical Pacific. Blue shading in this figure represents areas where sea surface temperatures are below normal, and the orange to red areas correspond to areas where sea surface temperatures are above normal. The light to medium blue on the map that is found along and surrounding the equator indicates that, on average, sea surface temperatures are currently below normal. Sea surface temperatures in what is called the Niño 3.4 region of the tropical Pacific are roughly 1.1 degrees Celsius below normal, which puts us in the La Niña phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation. La Niña conditions begin when sea surface temperatures in the Niño 3.4 region fall to 0.5 degrees Celsius below normal. The chart on the right shows the ENSO forecast from early May through December, January, February 2022. This chart indicates the probability of La Niña, shown with the gray, shown with the red bars, for sea surface temperatures in the Niña 3.4 region. La Niña is were to continue, and the odds for La Niña decrease in the late Northern Hemisphere summer with a 58% chance in August through October 2022, before slightly increasing through the Northern Hemisphere fall and winter 2022 with a 61% chance. Shifting now to slide 13, which represents our monthly outlooks for the month of June. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the month will be below, near, or above normal. The red and orange shading on the map to the left indicates areas where above normal temperatures are the most likely outcome, while the blue shading indicates areas where below normal temperatures are the most likely. For precipitation, in the map on the right, green shading indicates areas where above normal precipitation is most likely, and brown shading indicates areas where below normal precipitation is most likely. Looking first at the map on the left, the red and orange areas in the southern two-thirds of the U.S. indicate that this area is favored to have warmer than normal temperatures in June. The largest probabilities, above 60%, are forecast for western Texas and New Mexico, coinciding with the lowest soil moisture. Conversely, anomalously wet soil moisture was one reason for equal chances of below, near, or above normal temperatures across much of the northern Great Plains and upper Mississippi Valley, while the equal chances forecast along much of the West Coast was due in part to negative sea surface temperature anomalies nearby. Slightly elevated probabilities of below normal temperatures are forecast across western parts of Oregon and Washington, along with the Alaska Panhandle. Due to conflicting and weak signals among the tools, equal chances is forecast for the remainder of Alaska. Moving on to precipitation, shown in the figure on the right-hand side, the areas of brown shading across much of the central to southern Great Plains, extending westward to parts of the Great Basin, Pacific Northwest, and Northern California, indicates elevated probabilities of below normal precipitation. The slightly larger probabilities focused from southern Wyoming southward to the Texas Panhandle was due to La Nina composites and weak 3-4 tools. Since June is typically a dry time of the year for southern California and desert southwest, equal chances was forecast for these areas. Possibility of enhanced sea breeze convection supports a slight favoring of above normal precipitation for Florida and areas along and close to the southern Gulf Coast. Northern tiers of the U.S. and Alaska, a large area of equal chances was necessary in the June precipitation outlook due to weak signals among the dynamical model solutions. The 6-month period from June 2022, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 14. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the season will be below, near, or above normal. Looking at the figure on the left, warmer than normal temperatures are likely in most of the U.S., including northern and western Alaska, with the highest probabilities over the western half of the nation. The greatest likelihood for above normal temperatures are located in the central Great Basin through the central and southern Rockies. This elevated probability equal chances of above, near, or below normal temperatures are are expected to be similar to climatological probability.
Hi, Jonna. This is John Bateman. I think you are starting to break up a little bit, unfortunately. If we can get your connection back up, we will come back to you if we have any questions after this. But I just want to let folks know that after this slide, we do have the drought outlook slide as well, and maybe we can discuss that when we get a better connection with Jonna. In the meantime, though, if we want to go to the question and answer section, we can start doing that. If you have any specific questions for our call participants, please be sure to identify who you'd like to answer the question. And Ivy, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question?
Yes, absolutely. As a reminder, for those on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, please unmute your phone, press star 1, and record your name clearly when prompted. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question and star 2 to withdraw your question. So our first question is from Seth Borenstein from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is for Jonna, so I don't know if she's dialed back in. Has she dialed back in?
I'm here. Can
hey,
you all hear me?
Yes, now I can
hear you. Thank you.
Okay, my apologies. It must have been my cell signal.
No, though, I understand. Jonna, looking at the ENSO forecast, given that the anomaly in 3.4 in April was at a record in level for April. I'm wondering why it does the La Nina probabilities decrease over the next few months and then increase again. Can you sort of explain, why? I mean, it is still fair to say with a 58% chance, it's still more likely than not that we're going to have a La Nina through hurricane season. But what about it is less likely for the summer and then sort of slightly increases back up for the winter, which is of course important for drought in the West.
Sure. Yeah, there's a number of pieces of guidance that go into the ENSO forecast, which include dynamic models and statistical models as well as forecaster consensus. So the models and guidance this month did show that dip in the summer seasons and then the slight increase in the winter season. So it's based on the guidance that we have.
Okay, and this would, if it goes into the winter season as a La Nina, this would be officially a triple dip, would it not?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
We've had the past 2 years of La Nina.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, and again, for those on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, you may use star one. It looks like our next question and the only other question in queue right now is from Rebecca Hersher from NPR. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I also have a question about the ENSO, although it's much more basic. Can you just explain how that forecast could affect the hurricane season and then the drought and wildfire outlook going into the fall?
Yes, sure. In terms of La Nina and the hurricane season, there is a slightly elevated chance of La Nina for the upcoming hurricane season, which is summer into autumn. Typically, La Nina does result in more favorable conditions, but I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned for NOAA's seasonal hurricane outlook coming May 24th, which will tell you more about that. In terms of the drought, La Nina does impact drought as well, and in terms of next winter, is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, the fall going into the winter.
Right, so I'm going to encourage you to take a look at the drought outlook that will come out close to that time period.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question is from Allison Tobin from Money. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is for Jared regarding tornado season. I'm wondering if you have any predictions on the rest of the season, particularly in regards to damage, how damaging they can be.
Well, it certainly can be quite challenging, if not impossible, to know with any kind of detail or precision what the rest of the season will look like. The thing I can tell you and the thing I would focus us on is that as typical through, say, the month of May and going into June and the like, is that severe weather becomes more prevalent in a general sense. It becomes more prevalent across more areas of the United States. Typically, severe weather becomes more common as we go through the remainder of May into June. It becomes more common across, say, parts of the Midwest into the Northern Plains and also the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast states. So that's the main thing that I can guarantee in terms of a forecast, is that almost certainly things will become more active as we see in a typical season. We have no other things to really hang our hat on in terms of with any confidence saying things are going to end up being below normal or above normal for that matter. We've seen many cases where we start off active and then things turn relatively quieter, and vice versa as well. But then again, even when things are quiet, severe weather is very impactful on local scales. And when I say severe weather, we're dealing with storms and focusing on storms that produce large hail, damaging winds, and tornadoes. So even when overall numbers are below average, it's very impactful or can be very impactful on local communities, regional areas in terms of response and needs. So Overall numbers are one thing, but again, severe weather is tends to be very local and impactful, especially when you're thinking about things like tornadoes and larger hail and damaging winds. So things will undoubtedly become more active, more severe weather in more areas over the next 30 to 60 days or so before things tend to turn somewhat quieter, especially in regards to tornadoes. Overall numbers tend to become a little more muted as we go deeper into the summer, but we're kind of in that prime time right now overall as far as severe weather goes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from Dinah Pulver from USA Today. Your line is open.
Thank you. I wondered if you could talk just a little bit, Jonna, about why we have such a strong above normal temperatures forecast for the summer, particularly in New England and in the West.
Sure, yes. I will begin with the western part of the U.S. So in the western part of the U.S., we do have above normal temperatures predicted for the summer with a fairly high probability. And that is due to guidance that we are getting that is fairly consistent on the probability of above normal temperatures. Typically, we look at guidance from dynamical models as well as expected La Nina impacts and other things like soil moisture, particularly for this season. So all of those combined together are giving us higher
Yes, I was curious about the La Nina aspect of it, particularly about why La Nina makes it be warmer than normal.
Typically, La Nina favors warmer than normal conditions over much of the West in general.
And then in New England?
Yep, and in New England, similar response. Most of the guidance is favoring warmer than normal temperatures over New England. In this case, there are warmer SSTs off the coast of New England, the forecast.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And again, that is star one if you have a question on the phone. And our next question is from Jennifer Yacknin from E&E News. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you so much for having the call. I was actually hoping to shift us back to the drought outlook slide that hasn't come up yet. And in addition to just asking you to go through that for us, I was also curious, just looking at the grading on it, it looks like drought persists is sort of the lowest ranking. Is there any expectation that the drought can or does worsen, particularly in the West? Thank you.
Right, so the lowest ranking on this particular map is drought persists. Would you like me to go, now that you have me back, would you like me to go through the drought outlook slides as well?
That would be great, please.
John, would that be okay?
Yes, that's fine. That's a good idea. I appreciate the question. And yes, go ahead, Jonna. Thanks.
Okay, great. I'm sorry that my cell phone cut out for a minute there. So hopefully if you can hear me, just please interrupt if my signal starts to get funny again. So I'm going to move on to the drought outlook on slide 15. So the brown areas on the map indicate where drought is currently ongoing and expected to continue. Drought is most likely to persist across much of the western U.S., and there was improvement over parts of the plains during early to mid-May, and the southwestern U.S. and the southern high plains experienced worsening drought conditions given predominantly warm and dry conditions since mid-April. The yellow shading on the map indicates areas where drought development is likely, which can be seen in areas experiencing abnormally dry conditions in the eastern and northern Rockies. These areas coincide with the areas of drier than normal precipitation and warmer than normal temperatures expected due to La Nina impacts. Some drought development is forecast across parts of the Corn Belt where precipitation signals are lacking and soil moisture is dry to start the season. Favored above normal temperatures in a drier time of year also favors some drought development across the eastern parts of the southern plain. The tan shading on the map indicates areas where drought is predicted to remain but improve, and green shading indicates areas where drought removal is likely. Some improvement is forecast for the southern parts of the Four Corners associated with the climatological start of the North American monsoon in early July, which typically lasts beyond the end of August. Across the eastern CONUS, drought improvement and removal are broadly favored, with near to above normal precipitation favored at the monthly and seasonal leaves, and many areas entering in a climatologically wetter time of year. Note drought development is likely in Alaska as the state is entering into its wettest time of year. Drought persistence and development are likely in Hawaii as the state is now entering into a climatologically drier time of year. And some drought degradation is possible in Puerto Rico, while longer-term precipitation signals and the climatological ramp-up of the Atlantic hurricane season favor drought removal by the end of August. And that's it, and that's from the Climate Prediction Center, and I do apologize for my cell phone issues. And if we could continue now with the Q&A, I'll be happy to do so. Thank you so much.
I just was going to check and see if Jennifer had any other questions before I went to the next.
No, that was what I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. Thank you. And our next question comes from Doyle Rice from USA Today. Your line is open.
Oh, thanks for doing this call. I just wondered, is it accurate to say that parts of all 50 states are expected to have a warmer than normal summer? Looking at that map, it looked like there was no parts of the U.S. that were supposed to be cooler than normal. So I just wanted to double check that if that's accurate to say that pretty much the entire CONUS is supposed to be warmer than normal this year for summer.
That's correct. No parts of the map indicate anything leaning below for this particular June, July, August outlook. However, there are some areas where we may expect equal chances of above and below normal temperatures.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And again, that is star one if you have a question on the phone. And currently our last question in queue is coming from Seth Bornstein from Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. To bring back to the drought outlook and La Nina, can you give us a sense of, you know, you've got persistence issues, soil moisture issues, you know, and then you heat with the warm, you know, temperature, and then you've got La Nina. Can you give us a sense of how big the La Nina footprint is on the western drought outlook for the next for both this summer, and I know this only goes through the end of August, but going into further into the, you know, to the rest of fire season, just a sense. I know it would be qualitative, not quantitative, on how big an effect this La Nina is having on drought and fire season there.
Right. So noting that this is qualitative, of course, La Nina is one of the impacts that is considered in the drought outlook, particularly given the higher probabilities in the western part of the U.S. that are partially due to typical La Nina impacts, which favor warmer than normal conditions over much of the West. So that is considered there. In terms of the later leads and going past this particular drought outlook, this drought outlook goes through the end of August. So I'm not going to comment much more on that. My apologies.
I guess what I'm wondering more than anything is, if this were not a La Nina period, but we still had the persistence, you know, of the mega drought that's, you know, been there, and the soil, you know, which is part of the soil moisture issue, and would we see less of a drought, and would we see some, you know, some improvement had it not been for the La Nina? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense and a comment on how much, if any, this makes it worse. I mean, is this just for the drought? You know, you've got all these horrible things that are causing it, and this is just one more, or is this a big factor that without it, you know, things might be a little better?
So there are other things that go into this drought, of course. Low soil moisture is one of them. So both of those things are a factor here.
Okay. Because it's just, this is, you know, we've had this La Nina for such a long period of time. And when it finally ends, I mean,
Is that give hope? Or I mean, in other words, does the West have to wait for La Nina to be over for any hope of improvement in the drought?
That's a good question. Do you mind if we follow up with some of your questions offline?
Sure.
A bit? Thank you.
No problem. You know, and if Michelle, who I know is the La Nina, you know, Michelle or Mike, and I've talked to Mike, but, you know, maybe Michelle would be good to talk to on that. So thank you.
Thank you.
If you're listening, Jasmine. Thank you.
Thank you. And I am showing no other questions in queue.
Great. Thank you. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a few upcoming events. The release of the May 2022 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for June 8th. The release of the May 2022 Global Climate Report is scheduled for June 14th. And the next monthly media climate call is scheduled for June 16th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please feel free to email me, John Bateman. My contact information is available at the top of the Media Advisory. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect your line and enjoy the rest of your day.